Everybody, and welcome to Grim Scenarios. I am your host, Milk, here with your other host, Emma, and our very special guest, Ed. Hello, Ed.
Hi, Milk. I love, every time I catch one of these, I love your special Grim Scenarios voice. It makes me happy.
It is not my real voice. I do it at the beginning of the stream, too, and then about halfway through stream, I just forget.
It feels like it's the sort of thing where something's going to shock you out of it at some point, and you'll just be like, oh, yeah, now I'm human again. I'm not an announcer.
It was one of the things I learned about acting is that everybody has an acting voice, and, you just do it naturally when you start to read lines. So, yeah, you just have to break that habit. But I don't, because I'm not important. We're here to talk about something really exciting, which is the newly released character from TPI, which is the Wizard. Everybody's very excited about the Wizard. The Wizard's ability reads, once per game, choose to make a wish. If granted, it might have a price and leave a clue as to its nature.
Yeah, this is obviously a way more open-ended minion than any other minion that's ever been released, possibly any other character that's been released. It's certainly in terms of player agency, goes way beyond anything else. I had the chance to play with the Wizard a few times before it was released. I had a chance to play with it a few times since, but because of the sort of open-ended nature, Milk and I thought it would be really a good idea to get someone who had more Wizard experience than either of us on to help us sort of talk through the strategy of how to think about the Wizard. So we brought in Ed Gabriel.
I imagine I'm probably in the top three in running Wizard, so this is fine. I think, to be fair, of your pre-release Wizard games, I ran at least two of them.
So the one you ran was actually an Apothecary game, which Apothecary is scrapped and can be talked about publicly now. Which was basically a good Wizard. I did break that game. Some people have never forgiven me.
You broke that game in two different... Like, you broke that game and then someone else got the ability and broke it harder. It was... I can't remember exactly what Emma wished, but it was something like every alternate vote...
It was basically everyone alive was thiefed, and there was a permanent Voodoo in play. For the dead,
yeah.
But like you just couldn't kill people fast enough to make the Voodoo work because everyone was thiefed.
Yes, and then someone else put in a Wizard wish that was functionally the first time good players vote, it doesn't count. So there was this like, I was going around a circle going 1-0, -1-0, 1-1-0-1, and it was just an absolutely insane experience. And it's like, at multiple points, bear in mind both of these people, Emma and I think the other one was maybe Ryan, both of them were like pretty outed.
Yeah, because the way the Apothecary, the scrap character worked is when you made your equivalent of the wish, you died immediately.
Yes, so everyone knew it was there. So you get outed, and at various points both of them were being like, was that correct? But they didn't know each other's rules. They didn't know what they'd done. They'd each done. So they were both looking at the other one going, does that make sense from your point of view? And I was kept having to show answer and being like, I might have miscounted this vote. This is on you. I'm not taking responsibility for this.
I was also sitting next to Alejo, who had an execution-based role, and they were just like staring at me every night being like, you have taken away my ability to use my role.
To be honest, I think the funniest thing about it was that I think I said to Emma when she made this wish, you realise that this means you basically get one chance to kill the demon in the entire game.
I was like, yeah.
And Emma was like, that's fine. and I was like, okay. And so like, I felt that right there is a great example of that's the price in and of itself, right? Is you get one chance to kill the demon. but yeah, very silly.
But thankfully, Apothecary isn't released and is apparently never going to be released, which I think is good decisions at both ends. But Wizard is being released and has been released.
Yes, I think you mentioned it being the most open-ended in terms of player agency. I think the Wizard is sort of the player's version of the storyteller's atheist. Mm. It's in terms of getting to do what you like and getting to sort of try and make a game that's going to be fun in a way that you think is interesting. And this is one of the things that I think I just want to flag, like, right off the top with The Wizard. And I think Emma and I had this conversation when the release was initially decided, is so many people look at it and are just like, well, my job as a player in Blood on the Clock Tower is to win, right? So I should just wish something that makes me win. To which the answer is no. Your job as a part of a community that is playing Blood on the Clock Tower is to make the game fun. And if you can wish something that is interesting and fun and changes the game and helps you win, that's the Holy Grail. It's not like, you know, if the aim of the game was to win, you would just wish, I wish that I win. And that's the end of every Wizard game. There we go. That was fun. We had so much fun. And so many people get confused in that spectrum as to, like, where is the line between helping my team win and the game just ending and us not having any fun? And that's one of the things you have to navigate here. So it's worth remembering, as a player with the Wizard ability, you want to play the game too.
Yeah.
So you need to find ways to make the game different in a way that you can take advantage of, but that isn't just a, well, evil wins now.
Yeah. I think, like, a nice analogy for that point is, like, you know, according to the somewhat publicly available stats for Trouble Brewing, it's about a 50-50 win split for good and evil. According to, like, some players I've talked to privately, their win rates are generally in the range of 50 to 60% when people playing Trouble Brewing. In a 12-player Trouble Brewing, if the evil team just outs immediately, and you execute the demon, and then you re-rack and play 10 games, you'll win 75% of those games. You'll be the best Clock Tower player in the world.
Yep. Statistically correct.
You won't have any fun on the way, but, you know, if you want to win, you'll win a lot of games that way.
Yeah. This is the perfect excuse to just bring in some Sanderson, or, depending on your perspective, Sung Lee. There's so many philosophers, but yeah, journey before destination. Let's appreciate the game, not the result.
And I think that's like the core of things like Wizard and Atheist, right? It's, hey, let's do something fun and different. Let's make a variation on the game that's an interesting puzzle, that's interesting. You know, that's why, as storytellers, when we talk about Atheist, a lot of the time we say, you know, good should generally win, like, 99% of Atheist. You know, if it's a good team with an Atheist, they should win 99% of the time, and it should just be an interesting puzzle that they have to sort out.
Yes, and I kind of categorize Wizard wishes into a few different ways, and I do the same with Atheist. I don't think I've talked about this publicly before, but this is how I sort of mentally address it. You can play Wizard/Atheist games in a few different ways.
It'll be picked up by Audacity, probably, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But we won't.
But it was a great point.
It was excellent. Yeah, I think of Wizard and Atheist games in a couple of ways. The first is the most simple, and it is just, within the confines of the game we're currently playing, I'm just going to change details about a standard game of Clock Tower, and it's still a standard game of Clock Tower, right? The game is still pretty much what people expect. You're still hunting demons in exactly the same way. You get almost all the same information. You've maybe changed the character count or something has gone on, but that's still within Clock Tower. And this is the classic, like, you know, Atheist, where you maybe put in some duplicate characters, or you just mess with the character count, or you give information that is all consistent with people's abilities, and you do a very standard game of Clock Tower that's messed with only internally. Then the next one is when you go, I'm going to change something fundamental about the game, which is where sort of the line between Atheist and Amnesiac becomes fuzzy. People maybe go, oh, is this more of an Amnesiac ability? I've changed a rule of the game using an Amnesiac ability, and they get to try and work it out, and in which case it has to help the good team. Or if it's an Atheist game, they have to work out that rule has been changed in order to go, this is an Atheist game. And you can do the same thing with Wizard. You get to just be like, I'm going to change one of the fundamentals, and my team obviously knows which fundamental has been changed, so we're going to try and take advantage of that before the good team can work out from the clue and the price what the fundamental we changed was. And then the last one is basically, yeah, fuck it, let's do what we like. Let's do some absolute wild bullshit, which I don't know necessarily what the consequences are going to be, and the storyteller's going to be like, I'll try and work out something for this. And those in Atheist games can be wildly fun because a storyteller has got complete control over it, right? They've got the complete ability to go, oh, this wild thing that I did needs this trimming in order to work. The risk of doing this with Wizard Wishes and with Amnesiacs is the storyteller's only got a much more finite set of control on the thing you did. So if you're thinking about Wizard Wishes and you don't know your impact, lean towards categories 1 and 2, staying within the rules of the game, or maybe changing a base rule of the game before you lean into, oh, let's do something absolutely insane and see what happens.
Something I mentioned in a chat on our server was that I think there's also, just because of like the nature of streaming and stuff like that, there's a little bit of pressure on players, or players feel a little pressure to do something funny or fun or game-breaking. Yeah, big. You know, do something big with it. Because otherwise, oh, you've wasted your chance to do something, you know, fun and silly. And I don't think people should feel that way at all. I think people should use the ability within the realm of comfort. If you've got an idea that you think is crazy and big, you know, go for it. But if the very first game with Wizard that I story told this past week after the release, a player used the Wizard as a one-shot pit hag. And it was extremely effective. And the town didn't really catch on. They kind of caught on to the idea, but they didn't catch on to what had exactly happened. And the evil team won the game. And it was just a very subtle, simple thing. But that player used it at the right time, you know, the right choice at the right time. That was a great Wizard Wish. It helped the team win the game. You know, and I think there's like this pressure to like do something grandiose that, you know, fully changes the scope of the game. And I don't think people should feel that way. You should do what you want with it in whatever of those categories you think is going to be good.
Yeah, and this is actually, I said, you were both in the reveal game on the TPI stream. And I said after that game, that was a great game of content. It was not a great game of displaying the Wizard, as most people are going to get the most fun out of it. Like, the majority of groups are going to get the most fun out of Wizard with that sort of wish. Like, the first Wizard wish I experienced as a player was literally a Wizard who held their wish until the final five of a 15-player game, and then wished that the Demon and Magician changed alignment and character.
Swap.
Because the Magician had trapped the Demon into, like, did the, oh, I'm one of your minions, got away with it. Everyone believed them. They were going to execute the Demon that day, and they wished to swap. And the storyteller just approached both of them and was like, you are now the evil Demon, you are now the good Magician. And that literally won them the game.
It's
and it's not that's not wild or ridiculous, but it's like, it won them the game because the clue, naturally, is that the Demon is coming out being like, no, I've just been turned into the good Magician. You all saw me get taken away by the storyteller to have a conversation. Something is, you know, something's happened. There is a Wizard on the script. Something's gone on. But then you have to work out what. And so it was a really interesting game to be playing, because you're then like, that's a cracking wish. It didn't wildly change things. It was just like, oh, we're in trouble. Can I swap these? But yeah, so like, every example you're going to see online is going to be generally people playing for content, which that first reveal certainly was. I think almost three quarters of the wishes on the charity stream.
I think the one that wasn't
last 24 hours has been.
I think there was two that really weren't, and one of them I haven't seen the game yet because it was, I fell asleep and I don't know how it went. But the Wizard was about to be executed. This was in the Australian block with Arrow, and Kerry was the Wizard. He was about to be executed. He had hoped to use his wish later, and he was just like, the Baron can be a boom dandy now, please. And I don't know if the boom dandy ever exploded, but like, he was just like, well, I'm going down. Might as well like make the minion who's already finished and not going down potentially be useful later. The other one that I thought was really fun was a really subtle wish where, not necessarily subtle, like, it didn't really give evil that much of an advantage. It was just,
Christine's
the Wizard was
wish,
like, right? I would like the Wizard was like, I would like all the you start knowing rolls to get three pings instead of two.
Oh, that's a good one, too, yeah.
Oh, they were so unlucky as well, because
there was just one librarian.
Right.
So it was, but, like, she, like, messaged me during the game, the Wizard, and was like, if all this has done is caused Christine to have a breakdown over why she has three librarian pings, that's funny and hilarious. It, like, wasn't that hard for Christine to figure out which of her three pings was the mutant and which one wasn't? Like, but
it created
was just
a plausible
fun.
It created a plausible atheist world as well with some of the other claims that were going on, and like, it made it confusing. Obviously, in the context of that auctioneer style stream, you know, you don't know what characters are in play and stuff like that. The other one that I quite liked, and Ed was in this game, was Christine's wish that she made that all play. I think it was night three. All players select a character. They are mad as that character the next day. There's no consequence to the madness. There was, like, nothing bad would happen. Nothing, like, there's no mechanical change. But it meant that the entire town spent a day just talking nonsense, basically. Like, it wasted a resource that we don't talk about very much. We talk about time as a resource a lot, but it wasted a resource which is, like, processing power. You know, it's, like, it wasted the town's, like, ability to... We didn't problem solve that day and then killed a good player. It was great.
Yeah. Especially, it's got to be said, because most people's first instinct was to choose minions. Like, I chose Vizier.
Yeah,
I chose Wizard. I was like, I want to be the Wizard. Maybe I'll be the Wizard if I pick Wizard.
So yeah, we all chose minions, and then we're having to claim minions publicly because we don't know that there's no consequence. And there was a great exchange where, I think, Emma, you started this, right? There was like that big group chat where someone broke madness and we all sat there and waited to see if they were going to get any consequence.
It was everyone in the game. Everyone in the game was in one chat.
No, I wasn't. I had not been in the group chat, but when we got back to town after it, I was like, all right, I think I'm just going to try to... I started saying, I think I'm going to try... So it was like, no, Inspiration's already done that. You don't have to finish your sentence. I'm like, okay.
And, like, the thing I love about that is that's setting the stage for another Wizard Wish, right? That's setting the perfect stage for a Wizard Wish that goes, everyone chooses a character to be mad. If they are mad, X happens. And it's suddenly, like, people are going to go, oh, is this just consequence-free, like the first one? Or is there actually something else going on here? And it's like, you get to sort of build a meta based on that, which is really fun.
I had a great conversation with Christine right before that. And I think Ben was there, so I think chat did get to hear it, where Christine was like, yeah, I don't know what I want to do with my wish. And I just said, what's your favorite mechanic in Blood on the Clock Tower? Like, just do something related to your favorite mechanic and just have fun. Like, what does it matter how it affects the game? You know, just enjoy it.
Exactly. That's great. And, like, also a lot of the time those... So this is a different way of thinking of Wizard Wishes. Some of the best Wizard Wishes that are easiest for you to make and most fun for you to for people to interact with are ones that are going to have no price because they're just interesting. They're not wildly swingy. They're not putting a big penalty on the good team. They're not giving a massive boost to the evil team. They're just changing the game a little bit. And so the storyteller's going to look like that. That was a great example, right? You know, Christine didn't ask for a consequence to madness. And so Ben was like, well, there's no consequence to good players breaking this. All you're doing is taking away some time. There's no need for a price. Why would I need a price? This is fine. And why would I need a clue? Everyone's being woken up and told to pick a character and being told that they're mad at the character they just picked, right? There's no need for that, right? And so that's a really... those wishes are really just fun for everyone, right? You just get to... a thing happens and we all engage with it as much as the thing requires us to. And we don't need a price or a clue. It's great. We just roll on. And so the metric for those is always, are you doing something that's within the bounds of, yeah, that feels like a minion ability? And this is something that is going to come up a lot, I think, as we're going through, is like, does this wish feel like it's of the power level of a minion? Bearing in mind, the Vortox is a great, is one of the classic examples of, like, that is demon power level. Everything is inverted, right? If you're getting towards that power level of wish, you're not wishing for a minion ability, you're wishing for a demon ability. So that's sort of the bracket you need to be... If you're going up to Vortox level, your price is going to get bigger. If you're going beyond demon level, your price is going to be huge to bring you back down to a minion. So
yeah,
these are the things you bear in mind, right?
Yeah, so on the CT games right after Wizard came out, one of the players wished I would like all information to be false. And the storytellers thought about that, and like, that's the Vortox ability. That's a demon power level. They costed it as, okay, we'll put in the Vortox win condition, but it will benefit good. This wasn't something the Wizard had asked for. They didn't mention Vortox, but, like, you know, for the demon power level, you got a cost of an extra good win condition.
Yeah, perfect.
Makes perfect sense. So what we thought we would do, Ed, is we'll put you in the Wizard's seat. We've got a little grim set up here, and we thought we'd maybe have, like, have a couple of chats the way we usually do with our scenarios, and then have you kind of maybe come up with a wish or two, maybe of the maybe sort of showing, like, what kind of wish you could do each of those different tiers, just in, like, a generic game. Obviously, don't give away your best wishes, you know, we don't want that, but just something sort of, you know, something you focus on.
It has to be said. I love the fact that there's so many people who've got lists of wizard wishes, and I encourage these. I really want people to do them. You should have lists of wizard wishes and amnesiac abilities and things you want to do in atheist games. Do that. I am terrible at thinking of those. I love just rolling with stuff in the moment and being like, this is something we're finding entertaining right now. I'm doubling down.
Amazing. So let's hop out to the Grim and we'll give you the setup. All right, Emma, go ahead.
Yeah, so in our classic style of this, you have all these wonderful players, seats 1 through 12, except for there's no seat 5 because you're there. So on night 1, you're woken up and you're told that seat 4 is your demon and seat 11 is your fellow minion.
Okay. Seat 11 is a fellow minion. Okay.
You don't have to hold anything else because, you know.
Yeah.
That's how Clock Tower works.
Because wizard. Yeah. Okay. So my first instinct, as soon as I'm told that my demon's next to me, is always check for marionette, just in case it's the other side. But there's no marionette in the script. So coming into this, I want to know what my demon is. So this script I love. Patters and Alex did a great job writing this script because it's very open-ended in terms of what abilities are going to affect the game in different ways. The demons are all really quite different in terms of how they impact the game. With the exception of the fact that three of them are happy to have dead evils. There's just so much potential for so many different things to happen on here, which I really love because it means that the wizard just kind of gets to have an open playground. I'd want to know I'd try and talk to my demon, find out what they are.
Okay.
Would be probably my first conversation again because we can whisper because we're neighbours. Just as a side note, I was stunned in one of those charity stream games where I sent out the evil team. I gave the evil team their information, and before I'd even finished waking up the next good player, the demon and their neighbouring minion had already organised who was bluffing what. Exactly what information they were going to give and how they were planning the first 3 days to go. I was like, this is insane. it's just like, and you just watch these whisper envelopes just ping, 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 ping. It's ridiculous. Anyway, so yeah, I always want to lean into that. Because I'm going to play this very differently based on demons because you can lean into the fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we could do that. We could do that conversation real quick on the start of the day, I think.
Cool.
If you're not going to use your ability on night one, we can knock out the quick.
I know. Yeah.
C4.
This is the thing, because I don't plan my wizard wishes. I'm never going to have my wizard wish ready for the setup unless someone said something while we were doing the tokens going around, and I'm like, oh, there's some fun shenanigans I can play with that. So yeah, I'm waiting for at least day one.
All right, Emma, would you like to be C4?
Sure, I can be C4. So C4 tells you. I'm the imp.
Great.
They tell you that the bluffs are a high priestess, town crier, and savant. And they'll lean into the savant bluff, because I feel like savant is sort of a meta bluff for demons right now. And I don't think it should be. I think they should avoid it. But it does feel like it's something that demons are really enjoying right now, for some reason.
Yeah, there's definitely a meta there. That's probably a separate conversation. But I agree with you that it's an interesting meta, and it's fun. It's creating some interesting games, so we like this. Okay, we've got some quite a lot of the power in the information rolls. So what have I got here to play with? I am looking at this setup and thinking, I've got an imp. They might want to star pass, so I can't afford to do something that's going to out me.
Right.
Necessarily, especially because the other three minions are things that I want to keep in play. So if there's a star pass, I'm really hoping it's coming to me once I've used my wish, because I'd rather keep the Poison Serenovus boffin. Not least because star passing with a boffin, great. gives you potentially changing your ability. Love that. So I'm trying to think of something that isn't going to out me. I'm fine if it outs a wizard, as long as it's not specifically that I'm the wizard.
Yeah.
On this script, I think, you know, there's only three characters that already got the information. They're probably not lethal unless we got very unlucky with a Shugenja seat. So I'm not too worried about those. And so if I want to do something relatively quiet of the sort of minion level, I can probably lean into the fact that the almost all the information on here outside of our bluffs is coming through storyteller choices. The mayor bounces, farmer steer passes, the amnesiac info, the cannibal's obviously getting whatever the cannibal gets, but the fisherman and the high priestess are all storyteller controlled. And so I'm probably the quietest wish I can make is something like, I wish that I wish that you invert all storyteller guided choices.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just like, yeah, all you're going to do is you're going to choose the least helpful person for the farmer, you're going to give bad answers to the amnesiac, you're going to give a bad advice to the fisherman, that sort of thing. Just nice and simple, doesn't do too much.
Would you count like the fortune teller red herring in that?
They've already picked that, so I can't get them to change it at that point. I mean, depends who it is. Some people with token integrity would allow that, but that's a really simple wish. It doesn't do things a wild amount of things, but it's basically just like fucking with most of town's information at this point.
It's pretty good.
That's a nice simple one. If I want to get, do you want me to go through being increasingly wild, or do you want to talk about prices and clues?
I think it's easier if we talk about prices and clues for Wish once we know them.
Yeah.
Medium level, sort of changing a base rule of the game. These tend to be sort of generic. They don't necessarily fit to a specific scenario. Apologies for your grim scenarios. Because you basically get to look at rules of the game and go, what do I want to change? So you can look at rules of nomination. One of the wishes that I've been tempted to use for a while but haven't quite had the scenario where it seemed fun was just wishing that you can nominate, someone can be nominated more than once a day. Really causes chaos when you nominate someone again and the storyteller takes it and they go, no, they've been nominated. It's like, and? it's just, and again, no clue for that. You'll be surprised. I can't see anyone giving a clue for that because the clue is that it's happening, right?
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily wildly swingy, but it's really interesting. Especially if you think that you have tunneled town quite well onto the wrong people.
Sometimes a vote will happen where people are like, oh, if I had seen how the hands on that, I would have really wanted to vote on it.
100%. One that's similar, which I quite liked, I think it might have been mentioned on the release stream, is that the wishing, and you can't do it in the app, obviously, it's more of an in-person thing, wishing that the clock hands turn in a random direction each time that the storyteller runs a vote, so that nobody knows what the order of the votes is going to be at the start of the vote.
Yeah, so I have also seen a wizard wish once that if the good player that the storyteller thought was most useful for the demon to kill was nominated, the vote runs anti-clockwise. The evil team are just trying to pull nominations out so they can find out who the storyteller's like, yes, you should kill this fortune teller because the vote went the wrong way.
That's nice, I like that.
Yeah.
That's super useful.
Yeah, it also means you're suddenly getting to play. It's one of the things I like about the multiple nominations as well, is that all of the tricks people play in, like, oh, doing last second ties or dropping hands or raising hands at the last moment, you can't do any of those because we can just nominate them again and now we know what you want. It makes it a really interesting game. You can look at any game rule and mess with those. So, you know, changing the number of votes people get, making ghost votes permanent. That was a fun one I had once. Just ghost votes are not spent.
Oh, okay.
That's nice. Yeah.
That was specifically, I think that was in a Vigor Mortis game. The Vigor Mortis had killed one minion already, had killed the wizard already, and they were like, we've just discovered that the savant is sitting next to the other minion. I'd quite like to kill them, but this is problematic. And so the wizard was like, great, we'll keep our ghost votes, thanks. And they just voted. They set up this like, oh no, I accidentally used my ghost vote. And the storyteller goes, no, you didn't. And they're like, but yes, I did. And I was like, no, it's still there. I've not taken it away. And so they were like, okay, we'll test this, like being the good player that's found this by mistake and did like, can someone nominate and I'll be the only one that votes and see if I'm allowed to, this sort of thing. And then, yeah, all the good dead players got to vote too, but it's surprising how powerful it is when, because there's so many votes going on,
yeah,
so many voters available, it's actually really difficult to narrow down.
Especially since that's the normal, like, the normal concept trade-off for the Vig is, like, you lose that voting power, which, like, can really come in handy for evil at sometimes.
Yeah, because the only thing you lose in that scenario is the frame. You no longer lose the voting power, and you're like, okay.
How much do you feel like, Ed, because we could go through and show you some of the tokens that are on the Grim and let you kind of see it, you know, Grim state like a day or two in. How much of the Grim state do you think about, or not necessarily should people think about, but how does knowing the Grim state change what you might do with a wish?
I think it changes some. It kind of depends. This script is, I think, really well balanced because it's like, you can maybe find out that a couple of characters exist and mess with them. Like, you know, you're going to hear the rumors of, you know, there's a fortune teller ping or there's fortune teller knows. You're going to hear about savant information coming through the grapevine. You're going to hear about town crier information. Most of these usually by the end of day two.
Yeah.
And so you can lean into, well, I can mess with those if I want to. But it kind of just depends how much you're wanting to use your wish. If you wanted to use those within the game wishes, like within the current sort of framework of Clock Tower, then yeah, waiting to day three is a great time for those wishes because you get to be like, well, I know what information is out there broadly. I know what information I can continue to mess with. I know what information that already exists we need to come up with some ways to make look bad or contradict, and you can sort of tailor your wishes accordingly. If you're doing something that's going to change your rule of the game, most of the time I'd say do it. Just do it off the top because a lot of the time, you know, accepting sort of certain characters like Town Crier and Flower Girl that interact with those certain specific elements of the game, most things aren't going to be affected by that. You've just changed a rule and you're getting to play with that. So you can do that as early as you like. And if you're going to flip the table and make a completely different game, then that's entirely up to you.
I think something that's worth mentioning is, you know, the wizard doesn't have to solve all of evil's problems in a game, right? They don't have to solve everything that's going on. They only have to solve something. They only have to do something. They don't even have to solve anything, really, but they only have to do something, right? You can still solve other problems through the normal mechanisms of the other minion, the demon, socials, executions. Like, you're still playing the game, and so the wizard doesn't have to do everything themselves.
In fact, if the wizard tries to, like, solo solve all of evil's problems, there's probably going to be a pretty high cost to that and a pretty hefty hint because we're now... Minions don't do that. Minions don't solve all of evil's problems.
Yes. Yeah, I think a great example of that is I had a game where I'd put in three village idiots and there was some confluence of choices and conversations that made them all absolutely convinced who was the drunk and they were correct and the evil team knew they were correct, and so the wizard just wished to change the village idiot drunk. It's like, can you just make one of the other two the drunk, please?
That's great.
And it was a day two wish, so they'd got two sets of information each and they were really happy about this, and they just I changed the drunk, and I changed the drunk to the most harmful one because I was like, you know, sure, you're messing with three people's information out of a full town. You know, this is, I'll help you out a bit. But it just utterly messed with the game because then I think there was some combination of the two people that they thought were both sober picked the same person and got opposing results with no poisoner on the script and no reason for information to have changed. And they're suddenly like, well, everything's wrong. Everything up until now was wrong. We need to completely rethink all of this. And it won them the game just by messing with one character, admittedly held by three people, but one character in the game. Mm-hmm. And that's a really, like, you don't... But that was just messing with one character. There were, you know, there's six other townsfolk that you just left alone. And that's fine. That's a normal minion ability, right?
So, just from a perspective of maybe thinking about something adaptive when the evil team is in a bad situation, or in a tricky situation, through... whatever means might occur, whether it's, you know, conversations or whatever, you discover some information that is bad for your team here, which is that your neighbor is the empath with a one, and the player in seat 10 is the Shugenja with a clockwise.
Okay.
Now, that's strong information for the good team. that already exists on the table. So the question is, I guess my question is, you know, you get to the end of day one and you've kind of got this information. Is this something you think, okay, we're going to handle this through the normal mechanisms of the game? Or is this something where you're thinking, okay, I'm seeing something here that is a difficult situation for us. I need to make a big swing with the wizard.
That's fair. I think I'm thinking two things here. One of which is that that empath is more concerning to me than that Shigendra.
For sure.
Mainly because the empath is one execution away from my demon. And yes, you know, the classic when an empath has a one, kills a neighbor, keeps the one, they assume it was the other neighbor. That's still putting shade on my seat four that I don't want. And people are more inclined to execute based on empath information than they are Shigendra information, because Shigendra is pointing, you know,
somewhere
up to
in that
four
direction.
Seats away. You know, the Shigendra really can be sort of four, even five seats away, depending on setup. And so executing based on it is very helpful, whereas empath, if they're sober, is one of two. So that's the one I'm more concerned about. Having said that, I think my answer to this is different to many others in that I just quite like gutsing it out with empaths, neighbours, and just being like, I have faith in my ability to at least survive 2 days in this scenario. But, you know, if you're concerned about that, then that's potentially something you can, like, if you're going down the gentle route, the demon registers as good to the empath. It's just such a gentle wish. Let yourself get executed. Empath gets a zero. You make yourself look nice and evil. Happy days. We're rolling. It's not necessarily big and swingy, but, you know, would there be a price? Probably not. Will there be a clue? Probably. But it's not so huge that they're going to want to make it really obvious. Because you're basically poisoning one character for one specific purpose. So, you know, you can lean into that sort of thing. If you're wanting to get splashy, you can lean into... Like, one of the things that I've only seen once and I really enjoyed was basically just someone who wished a rearrangement of the town square.
Yeah.
It's just like, I wish that these four pairs of people swap seats. It's just gone everywhere, and it's like at that point, me sat there with an empath one on me is information, but it's no longer harming my demon as much as it would be. Well, yeah, there's no chef on here, so I just had to quickly check. So that sort of thing just takes that concern away. It's like now that information is just on me, and it's a one of two. And also, I don't know how much other people have played with the matron. It is amazing how effective on making it difficult for people to remember who that information is relevant to.
Especially like in person.
So matrons with empaths is generally not too bad. An empath can usually remember their two neighbors. Shugenjas, it's much worse when they're trying to be like, hang on, so it was Milk and then it was Samantha and then, oh, hang on, was it Bort or Jamming's next? I don't remember, like, you know. It's like, and you're having to consult multiple other people in order to find out what your original information was, which, you know, this causes a lot of problems. And I mean, on this script, it's not as good as it might be on others. There's only a limited amount of neighbouring stuff on here. But still, there's potential of that just being like, yeah, the empath is maybe a long-term problem for me because I'm neighbouring the demon and I might die. So I'm just going to make it a short-term problem. It can go over there.
I can say, as a person who's played the script as the savant, where characters' positions were moving throughout the game, not even players, just the characters, I can say the savant could be heavily fucked with by having their information about relative seating positions no longer relevant.
Yeah, that's fair.
Shall we go back into the potion shop and talk a little bit about storytelling the wizard and doing some talk about some costs and things like that?
Sure.
It's a bit, you know, bit nicer presentation to have us all sitting here.
Yeah, that's fair.
You mentioned, we talked about some subtle wishes that don't necessarily need a cost or need a minor cost and then a clue. So that's kind of the baseline of something that's maybe even weaker to some extent or does less than a minion ability. So for example, the demon doesn't register to the empath, the demon doesn't register as evil to the empath. You know, that's not even really as powerful as a poisoner. You know, the one time use pit hag you know, again, not particularly powerful. Maybe it needs a clue, depending on what they brought into play, but, you know, things of that nature, you know, fairly straightforward. Where's the line where we start to see a change in that, where we do need to impose a cost? Obviously, there's some things that, you know, necessitate a cost. A game I ran, the wizard wished for executions, a wizard wished basically for executions to fail in a Vortox game. And so the cost was that the Vortox win condition no longer functioned. Like, I just took the Vortox win condition out of play. Right? That's a reasonable cost that evil can't just win the game straight up. So where's that line? Where are the kind of the lines, or what are some ways to think about the cost associated with a wish?
So the first question is the one you just aptly gave us, which is this going to allow a team to win easily? In which case, you need to prevent that from being true, because there's the benchmark that is often quoted, which is both really positive and occasionally a little bit toxic, is you ideally want a final three where there's a debate on the final three as to who the demon is. Like, that's generally a good benchmark. If you take it too far, it's unpleasant. If an evil team is just winning,
let them win.
Don't mayor bounce to the poisoner. That's, you know, like, that's so there is a taking that too far. But as a rule, if that wizard wish is going to make it so that the evil team, or even sometimes the good team, if the wizard has not thought through the consequences of their actions, is going to win super quickly, you need to cost that accordingly so that it's not a winning thing. So that's kind of the easiest scenario, is when you can be like, oh, I can see how this is going to make one team win. I need to cost that. The more difficult one I usually use as a benchmark in my own head of, like, what scale of cost am I making here is, do I immediately see the consequences of what's going to happen here? If I don't immediately know what the consequences are, I probably need a bigger clue at least, and probably slightly more of a cost, because this is going to snowball and I can't work out how. And that's usually an indication that the wish is complicated enough and therefore big enough that it needs a cost in order to stop it doing something wild. Easy examples of those are things like more wizard wishes, which people have wildly varying opinions on. I just don't think they're particularly fun to have more than one wizard wish. It's like the joy of Clock Tower is that everyone has a unique character. Can we not just give everyone the same character? You know, I appreciate that I talked about Village Idiot earlier, but, like, that is a character that's designed to interact within itself, right? The wizard is... There's no design space where it's interesting for the wizard to have another wizard.
Yeah.
You're just making the game less interesting for each individual wizard. So I personally think it's most interesting if you don't have multiple wishes and you just let the wizard stand alone and do its thing. But anytime you are dealing with multiple wizard wishes, you need a decent sized cost and you need a decent sized clue that that's the case. Because otherwise the game can just snowball so quickly and the good team can do nothing about it. The reveal stream was quite a good example of this. Like, even with the second cost being basically confirmation there'd been more than one wizard wish, the good team were in the final five and then three being like, I don't know what the wizard wishes were. There's just too much going on. Like, I can't work out the combination.
It's just too many layers, right? It's just too many different pieces.
Yeah.
My initial thought with that, and partially because one of the first wizard games I ran after it came out, the wizard explicitly wished for six of the characters to stay in play and then get doubled among the other six characters, and they explicitly wanted an imp and a wizard to be one of the doubled characters. I was like, well, the new imp and wizard are just going to be good. Like, you're not getting a second evil wizard and a second... You only have one because there's only three evil players, but you're not getting the second wizard or the second imp. Those are going to the other team.
Yeah. I'm on board with that.
Like, I didn't think this was a particularly effective wish, but it was a very funny game for most of the players. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's a good example of, at that point, you might as well, depending on what the third minion was, lean into duplicating the entire evil team into the good team, and then it is a game of cat and mouse, and at least six of the players have got major influence on the game, even if no one else does, right? So that's still going to be a fun game for most people. You just have to be a little bit careful, because if you're one of the leftover people, the last six that didn't get an evil ability, either starting or ending, how much impact are you having on that game? How relevant are you?
Yeah.
Not least because I suspect that that sort of game is going to be dominated by the night kills rather than by the executions, at which point you're like...
It was certainly a game where the good imp killed the third evil player and then the evil imp at the first two opportunities.
Yeah, naturally.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
The consequences of my own actions.
Oh, the consequences of my actions. Humorous. And I have another sort of probably... adjacent to costing question for you, which is, I imagine I know how you'll respond to this, but I just wanted people to be able to hear it sort of from you. As storytellers are learning to storytell the wizard, and as they're kind of storytelling their first or second or tenth or whatever game, what should they do if they discover later, a day or two later after a wish has been put in play, that there's something broken about that wish or something problematic for the game about that wish that they didn't foresee? How can storytellers make sure that the game stays fun for the players in those kind of circumstances?
There's two options. One of which is that there's nothing that says the price is a single action. So you can continue to cost that wish. It's like, oh, I did this thing initially. I need to do more to prevent it. You have the complete freedom. Like, this is one of the advantages of the wizard. I did compare it earlier to the atheist and said, you know, the wizard is a bit more restrictive in terms of what the storyteller can do. Once a wizard has wished, as long as you're just dealing with the consequences of the wizard wish, you can more or less do what you like. But you just need to be able to sit there after the game and go, I saw this situation and I tried to make the game fun through means X, Y, Z. You need to be able to justify yourself to your players for them to trust you as a storyteller. And this is an exact example of that. You know, if... you mentioned you're preventing executions. For executions fail in the Vortox game earlier. If you'd not twigged the Vortox thing, that the Vortox would just win immediately... Well, the moment that you needed to make that price happen when you're like, oh shit, this is broken, is as you're about to be like, the evil team wins, you just go, no, they don't. And you move on. Because that could have been part of the cost the entire time. No one else knows, and this is fine, and you can tell people that at the end of the game. It's like, oh, you'll find this funny. I initially didn't realise this would make the evil team win, and then we got to that point, I was like, oh yeah, I need to stop the evil team just winning, and therefore I did this thing. And no one's going to question that. That's always true with the cost explicitly. The clue is hard. Like, if you realize you've not given enough of a clue to the good team, that's maybe a little... That can feel a bit worse for a wizard, right? If they've seen something that looks like a clue, everyone's gone, that can't happen normally, that's a clue, and then something else happens, that can feel a bit bad, and that's the situation where you maybe want to try and work out some mechanical way to push it into a cost rather than cluing. But then sometimes that's unavoidable as well. So... it's not prescriptive, but as a rule, you can generally shove stuff into cost, even if you've already given it a bit of cost that you thought was appropriate, if you need to adjust for something that you were like, oh, I didn't think of this earlier, and I maybe need to change this. That's totally fine. I'm just going to say it outright. I know that Emma's expressed this opinion. Most people aren't going to be playing a game with you where there's a wizard on the script unless they trust you to deal with it.
Yeah.
So remember that your players are here because they trust you to deal with it, and then take the actions that you feel are appropriate, and then afterwards explain those actions, and it's up to them if they continue to trust you to deal with the wizard in future. But if you've acted in good faith and you've acted to try and make the game as fun as possible, they will.
I think my players and our players would understand people are going through a learning process as well.
And like, this can also be like heavily, you know, player dependent. Like, I ran another game Friday night after the wizard came out where it was a 9-player Vortox game with a zealot in the bag. The wizard was seen by the steward and got really panicked because they didn't have a bluff ready. So they came to me and was like, I would like the steward to be evil now so they don't call me out on my bullshit. And I was like, huh. Uh-huh. There's no extra evils on this script, naturally. There's a zealot, and it's a Vortox, and it's 9 players. Like, on day 2, evil can just, like, power through a tie on votes. I don't want that to happen. this player will probably be fine with this. So I just went around town telling everyone that the steward was evil. So it's like, yeah, she's evil.
It's fun.
Like, and for her, that was great. She had a lot of fun with it. There's other players I would have who, like, really, really do not like being outed evil. And I would have to find some other way to cost that wish effectively. Because if you ruin the game for the player who doesn't want to be outed evil, like, even if you've balanced it, you've taken away the fun element for someone, and that's not cool either.
Yes, and I did get sidetracked from... This was one of the things I was going to say earlier. With most wizards, there's nothing wrong with talking to them. Especially if you're going to have to add an extra cost, and doubly so if you're going to have to add an extra clue. There's nothing wrong with pulling them aside. Obviously, it's especially easy online. You can just pull them into a chat at night and just go, hey, I realised there was a consequence of your wish that I didn't see earlier. I think it's going to be unfun if I leave it as it is. I'm going to increase the cost or change the clue or add a clue. Just so you know, I'm happy to talk to you about this after the game to tell you what's happened. A lot of the time, I have had this before where I've been like, I specifically had a wish where I was like, I don't know how I'm going to cost that and clue that, but I'm going to... This is something I'll say to people a lot, and I think this is generally a useful thing for the wizard when you're storytelling, is if a wizard comes up to me on day one and makes a wish, I'll turn around to them and be like, I'm going to have more time to think about that in a minute. I'm going to treat this moment as when you wished, when I actually enact the wish, but I might have to come back to you tonight or later in the day to discuss it a little bit. But right now, this is when you wished, and I will backdate anything to now if we need to. So that I have a chance to think about it slightly without them stood there staring at you being like, I'm talking to the storyteller for a really long time in a wizard game, can you please make a decision so I can fuck off? You know, so just turn around and being like, I think I said this on one of the streams, I said this to Jammings with his ridiculous one.
Which got scuffed for completely unfortunate other reasons.
Yes, I have no control over the app going down. I cannot control this one.
But like, I thought that was like a really good demonstration of like, you know, Jammings had a wish that was fun. That was maybe or may not going to work for that game because it involved, you know, going back on the Twitch VOD and figuring out what everyone's favorite characters were and how you could act in a balanced way. And that's what you told Jammings.
Yes. I don't know how I'm going to make this work. I'm going to potentially come back to you. As it happened, I didn't need to come back to Jammings and be like, I'm going to need you to change this or I'm going to need to do this other thing, because Jammings is also a really good player who knows how to storytell, whose response was... Oh, how about this? I'll just wish that at some point this sort of thing happens and then it's open-ended. And this is something you can remember as a wizard as well. This goes both ways. If you're a wizard and you're like, this is the gist of what I want, but I don't know the wording. If you trust your storyteller and they're going to make it fun, turn around to them and go, I wish that seating changes, and just walk away. And the storyteller will be like, all right. I'll do something fun with that. You know, you don't have to be like, I'm going to wish that exactly seats 4 and 12 swap and these things. It's not required. A wish is a wish, not a rule. It's an open-ended thing. You can just wish for something, and yeah, there's a monkey's paw element of it, but it's, you know, the classic example is the genie, right? He just wishes to be a prince. He doesn't wish what country to be a prince of or how that's going to be enacted and anything else. The genie makes him a relevant prince for the thing he wants to do. And if you've got a good faith genie, in this case your storyteller, who is by definition in good faith trying to work with you, they're going to do a thing that's helping, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So lean into that. Yeah, well,
I think
I'm assuming good faith.
I was talking to a friend about this, and I thought a very subtle, soft wish, like in that vein, is the first time I wish that the first time you, the storyteller, think something would be bad for the evil team, something good happens for us.
Yeah, love that.
Simple.
And that's, again, that's something that's kind of going to carry its own clue and doesn't necessarily need a cost, because the clue is going to be that something's going to change most of the time. And the cost is going to be sort of inherent in, well, I chose to only do something that's this good, not this good.
Yeah.
So, great.
It's not going to save us if the demon gets killed twice. It's not going to save us if, you know, all of the information is pointing to an evil player. But it might save us... Yeah. For a little while, if something, you know, bad happens.
I love the idea of a wizard really distilling that down to the absolute minimum, which is just walking up to the storyteller and being like, I wish that you'd do us a favor at some point and walk
away. I love that.
Just like, just being like, I've got no good ideas right now. Just help us out.
That's great.
And then leave. Yeah.
Yeah. Simple, yeah. Effective.
And because, again, I can do that without any clue and without any price, because that might just be me being like, I'm going to give, I don't know, I'm going to give a fisherman not the best advice. I'm going to give them medium level advice. I'm going to point the high priestess to you when I might have given them the savant. I don't have to do anything that's going to massively swing the game. I'm just going to help you out a little bit. And that's fine.
Yeah.
You don't have to, you know, you don't have to wish to change the game entirely. Because this is the other end of this scale, right? I'm going to go into some of these just because they've been wild. I've had wizards wish to swap places with me. That was quite interesting. When I've gone into a game going like, well, I know the grimoire, and I'm now the evil wizard.
When the wizard swaps places with the storyteller, does the wizard like retain their evil alignment? Like, what's going on?
So this was the debate that we had, and this is someone that I know well. It's a playtester. And so I was like, okay, but this is how this works. I know you can do the mechanical storytelling of this game. I'm telling you now that I'm giving myself the cost of your wish is that I have a wizard wish. And so if I need to, I will wish that I am the storyteller again. And then I'll invert this. But I'm trusting you that by swapping, you're going to run this game in good faith. And because we've swapped, everyone knows that they were, if maybe not the wizard, but they were certainly evil, because the wizard wouldn't do that with anyone else. And they therefore know that I'm almost certainly evil. And so this was kind of powerful for them because it meant that I immediately got executed. So that wasted a day. And then they just ran the game in complete good faith after that. But they were genuinely like, I kind of did it in case there was this sort of script, right? Where they got to mess with fisherman information.
Yeah.
They got to mess with the savant. They got to maybe move the fortune teller, red herring, because there's no rules about whether the storyteller changes mid-game, whether that's a fresh grimoire or not. That was the argument they were willing to make. As it turns out, there was like one character they could actively mislead, and everything else was mechanical. Like, you have to give the empath a one, you can't give them a zero because they're not poisoned. So they were reduced to basically, they were waking up the evil players and being like, poison this person. they woke up the poisoner who started to point to someone, and they were walking across the room being like, no, no, here. To wait until the poisoner pointed out who they wanted them to. Which I think is a fun wish,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And everyone knows that that's happened, and it's all pretty obvious. And it's like, again, as long as the player is someone you can trust to do that, it's like, sure, you're going to interact with good faith with this. But that's such a wild, swingy wish to make. And I think just also hilarious.
Yeah, no, there's lots of, like, on this script, like, you could really, like, you could take a savant, a fisherman, an amnesiac that way really easily. But also,
yeah,
maybe it's a fortune teller, empath, Shugenja investigator game where you've now are just sitting here, like, okay.
Yeah, now I'm just computing the results for people. Yeah, it was also great because they deliberately chose to... They wished during day one for it to take effect at the end. I wish for you to wake me up at the end of night two and swap places with me so that I'd run the whole night and then gave them the grimoire and sat down. And they then woke everyone up and were like, oh, this person's died. Which was just a beautiful moment of when the voice you're not expecting wakes you up and everyone's like, do we actually wake up? And so people were slowly opening their eyes when they see that everyone else is, and then they're like, what the fuck just happened? It was great. It was very silly. But yeah, that sort of thing, like, I don't remember where I started this point with, but like, a lot of the time when a wish is wild and swingy, it's its own clue, but the price is the problem. And that's the balance.
Yeah.
And obviously, in this case, the price was that the evil team basically had a player that could not help them. Like, I'm sat there being like, no one's going to believe anything I say. No one's going to... Like, all I get to do is throw my vote into various situations and cause some chaos. And, like, so the evil team is functionally one down, but they are making optimal knight choices. So I was kind of like, I don't really need to price this particularly, apart from giving myself a get-out clause if you are going to, you know, manipulate it, and otherwise I'm just good. I can just let this happen because it's so obvious and so wild. And like a bit of that with a lot of the big wishes, like, you know, we mentioned earlier your voting manipulation wish, Emma, of like what votes counted and which votes didn't. It's like, I don't need to price that. Like, it's just happening. Everyone can see it, right? And then they get to react. So yeah.
Though I will say, like, I think I've found, like, if a wish is going to have a really obvious thing that happens to the players, you can have fun with giving an obvious hint that lines up with the obvious thing. You can let yourself have a little fun with the storyteller.
That is true. And I think it's something that people are going to need to bear in mind slightly, as we've not talked about, and I forgot to mention earlier when I was intending to. All of us are quite prone to, as storytellers, leaning into the spirit of the community and the chat that's going on and the conversations that are happening, right? We all quite like being, you know, leaning into that. If someone's, you know, I think the example we had in the mega stream was Aggie always being late back when the bell is rung, and therefore we gave her the Yagbabble phrase, I'm not late. Like, we like playing along with people in those scenarios. The risk in a wizard game is that anytime you're doing something that's in the zeitgeist, the meme of the community, is people are like, is that a clue or are you just being our friend? And so sometimes there's a little bit of difficulty in that where we need to restrain ourselves as storytellers from saying the things that we would naturally. And I did this in that game, actually. Like, as I returned to the town square on the first day, to open the first day, after running the first night, someone was just saying, oh, don't trust any of them. So I echoed it and then said, you know, the game has begun, carry on, go have your chats. And people were instantly like, is that a clue? And I just sat there and went, ah, shit, I forgot that it was a wizard script now. Because it was the first game where they knew it was a wizard script as opposed to not knowing it was a wizard script. And I just didn't think about it and was like, ah, yeah, I need to remember to not have a personality early on in wizard scripts so that people aren't confused about clues, because you want them to be able to actually pick up on your clues you're making. Because I know this has been mentioned multiple times, but like, I often clue with words, and I don't clue in a sort of like, you know, in the reveal game, Jamie and Ben actively said the second wish has negated the price of the first wish or something like that. I try not to be that obvious most of the time, although if it's a big thing I might. But I will do, you know, when I wake you up, I'll say a thing. When I'm running nominations, I might say something weird to give you a clue that it's about nominations. So, like, I think we mentioned I mentioned the vote going the wrong way in that game. I didn't feel like it was going to be fair to just do that without any warning beforehand. Admittedly, once I'd run it the first time, people were going to know there was a chance that a vote was going to go the wrong way. But they didn't know before that one, and that could change the game, and that could be a little bit unfun for people. So, yeah, that nomination, I was like, oh, this feels weird. Vote on this person, 3-2-1, and started running in the wrong direction. And people didn't pick up that this feels weird the first time. But when I said it the second time, the next day, when the next person got nominated, I was going to run the wrong way, people were like, the vote's changing! And so you just gave a little bit of a nudge. And so you need to remember that those things that you might do as a joke normally are actually a clue now. So you need to be worried that you're not giving a clue that isn't actually a clue.
Yeah, no. In one of the mega streams, I guess, games yesterday, Tom wished for, as soon as there was a majority of votes on someone, they would be executed immediately. And I was like, Well, after I do this once, it's going to be incredibly obvious to the players what's happening. But they're going to need something to let them know the first time. Like, if it gets to 6, the player's dead. I was like, So I just, like, repeatedly on each nomination until someone got 6, I was like, by the way, if this gets 6, this person will die.
Yeah, the way you phrased it was perfect. I can't remember exactly how you phrased it, but genuinely, like, the phrasing was perfect. It was what you normally say when you announce how many votes it takes, except instead of saying, like, we'll be marked for execution, you said, we'll die. Like, or will be executed or something. And it was just, it was perfect. It was like, it was your usual patter, you know, your usual cadence, except different. And as soon as everybody heard you say it, everybody was like, oh, that's different. That's not the thing. That's not the thing she usually says.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And that's exactly the sort of thing that you just need to be aware is a thing. And as a player, you need to keep your eyes open for that. You need to be watching out for those things that the storyteller is doing that is out of the ordinary in order to pick up on your clues, which is one of the reasons why in the reveal game, like, I didn't know what the first wizard wish was until, but I picked up on the, why is Ben telling us that the person who died at night was killed with a hairdryer? And I was already picking up on that, and then I was like, wait, I'm sitting next to the wizard and I'm also evil. I can just ask what the wish was. But, like, I was already trying to solve the wizard wish, despite him being on my team. lean into those.
We've said a few
things
about
it. It was a little
that.
Unfortunate in the release game, because, like, Milk got executed, and then the next day, Ben and James started talking about Sweeney Todd, and I was like, is this just a cannibal? Milk was the cannibal clue. But it was a barber clue, because Sweeney Todd is both a barber and a cannibal.
Yes.
And we've said a few things about that release game. And I want to point out that, you know, obviously we're all in the process of sort of figuring out Wizard. Making winning not always the most important thing to you when you play. Making fun a priority for you when you play. It was very satisfying solving out the bits of Wizard that we did solve out. You know, and so even though it's not like, I don't want to say it's like a moral victory, but there's some sense of satisfaction. Like, even if the evil team still wins, even if they get away with it, there's some satisfaction in solving out a tricky or subtle wizard wish that you kind of feel good after the game. Even if you didn't quite solve the game at the end, you kind of feel good that you figured out what somebody's clever idea was.
I definitely felt good about the fact that we solved out as a town that the barbers were suppressed. That there was a barber ability in play, even though there shouldn't have been. As you can see on the script, on the image, there's no barber on this script. that we solved out that the actual outsiders were not able to say they were outsiders for whatever reason, and that the person who was claiming outsider was definitely evil. I felt very happy with this as a town. We solved those three things. We lost the game, and I don't think we had a real shot at winning the game. But solving those three things still felt relatively satisfying.
Yeah, I think one of the other things about that game was I maybe put... I think is a great example of if I was trying to win the game, I maybe don't do some of the things I did in that game. Certainly, I don't make Pat as the wizard. That's one of the things. that's probably not one of the things I do. But one of the things was like that first wish was so wildly powerful in a like it's going to make evil win kind of way that I told the town what the wish was as an evil player. I hinted at it privately until someone, I think might have been Samantha.
You and I had a conversation about it where I said something and you were like, oh, that sounds right. You know, or that sounds similar. You may have had the same conversation with others, but I think they kind of, as we were catching on to it,
I was dropping hints in conversations to people because I felt like it was good. I felt like the game was about to be a landslide and I wanted it to not be. So I was like, you know what? This is going to be way more fun if the good team works out what the wizard wish is because they get to play into it. That gives them a real opportunity to lean into this as well. So I was like, I'm just going to subtly nudge the barber direction in conversations until people are like, well, maybe this is the wish. And then once people had worked out the wish, I did sit there going, oh, maybe there's more to it. And so I was throwing the reason that the outsiders can't tell us is because first that night there was multiple barbers and now there's multiple plague doctors that are giving multiple serenovi and doing this sort of thing, but still, like, you sometimes just play the game differently. And I think all of this is kind of an aside and just leaning into that point of every game you watch online is going to be partially for the content, and that game was very much for the content, and so it was like this is an eternal balance that Ben and I have talked to a few times when we're doing some of the Kickstarter characters back in, you know, a couple of years ago, was that a reveal game, you want to be exciting and interesting because you want people to be like, this character seems really fun. But what you don't want is to give a false view of how it should be played and how fun it is and who it's fun for. Because then people have the wrong idea and they try and storytell it in the wrong way and they try and play it in the wrong way and therefore then going to actively be to the detriment of player fun. Right? And that game, I think, was a great example where if some of those actions are taken in a random game of pick-up players in your local town where you're just like, oh, we're playing Clock Tower tonight at this board game cafe, come along and play. a lot of people would have a very bad time. But in that situation that we're in, with the players that we had and with the audience that we had and with the attitude that people knew they were approaching the game with, it was a very entertaining spectator game to watch as from a storyteller perspective. And so that balance always wanders, but that game made it really interesting and was one of the reasons why I was really glad that the wizard was inevitably going to end up in the charity stream and that, you know, it's going to be on the Sunday TPI stream tonight and it's on various other streams, because it's like, we need more examples to give people more of an idea of where the spectrum is here, in order for people to make those Christine wishes of just everyone's mad and give people other context, because I don't think any of the other games I've seen or been participated in with the wizard since its release have had that same level of like audience entertainment that the reveal stream did. But it has had a much better example. They have had much better examples of things that might happen in real life when you're playing with your regular friends rather than doing a, we must be entertaining for those 1,000 people over there. And so I think there's also something to remember. You're not trying to emulate the ridiculousness of a stream unless your group plays like that. You're trying to give that level of entertainment to the people in the game, because they're the only people that are getting entertainment out of this. There's no one watching you most of the time. So remember that who you're entertaining.
Yeah. You always need to, like, even with, like, like some of the base three characters, like Sarah Novus, you always need to remember, like, who are the people I'm playing with? Like, Sarah Novus is a great example of this, because there's some people who, like, if you make them mad every day as a different character, they'll be the best game of their life. If you Sarah lock them, it'll be the best game of their life. And there's other players where if you make them mad once, it'll be a fun time for them, but if you Sarah lock them or make them mad every day, they're going to want to punch you after the game. Like, yeah. Like you need to know like who you're playing with and what you're doing when you're doing these things. And Wizard is like that to a whole new level of.
Yeah, especially because a lot of Wizard wishes have ramifications that you cannot see. The storyteller might not even see, as we've discussed earlier. So you need to remember that when you make an open-ended wish, you can be affecting a bunch of people. And so, like, this is the storyteller's overarching responsibility most of the time is to help people have a fun game, but it is also an implicit burden of the social contract that you've signed up to as a player joining a group that is playing a group game, that you are trying to make it fun for everyone. And I think this is going to be a mild flag of something that people might want to attend if they're coming to the Clock Tower, well, to the Final 3 Con in DC. Milk and I are going to do a panel about the social contract of Clock Tower and some of the things that people don't necessarily think about when they are joining to play, and this the wizard I think is kind of hits on a lot of these points of when you sign up to play a game of Clock Tower, the obvious thing that you're signing up to do is to try and win the game. Everyone sees that, everyone's like, yes, my job, it's in the rules, I'm supposed to try and win with my team. And the less obvious things are within the confines of it being a good experience for people, within the confines of this still being a game rather than a genuine social interaction where we can actually hurt each other as people, within the confines of this is a community that I want to continue to be involved in and these are people I want to continue to be my friends. And it's very easy, especially with some of the other social interaction games that have come up and the communities that come up around those, to come into Clock Tower with the mentality of, well, yeah, if you're trying to win, then that's fine and everyone will forgive you for that after the game. And actually, Clock Tower gets so much easier broken by that attitude than some of the other social deduction games do. And The Wizard is such a strong example of it. You can win the game as The Wizard. You can win it by yourself. You're the only one who's going to have fun. And most of the time, even you're not. So, like, leaning into this social contract and, like, yeah, there's other things apart from winning that you're trying to achieve right now is huge. And then, like I say, there's probably going to be 90 minutes of me and Milk talking about this and the impact on neurospicy people and why we have so many neurospicy people in Clock Tower and various other things at Final 3 Con.
I'll just say...
They haven't actually scheduled that yet, yeah, but I, you know, should probably remind them in now.
I'll just say, related to that, it's just something about Clock Tower in general, and I've mentioned it a few times, and Emma mentions it quite a lot as well, and I know you've mentioned it before, Ed. But it's always worth reiterating that one of the most brilliant things about Clock Tower is Rule 4, which is play nice. And I come from the realm of competitive progression rating in World of Warcraft, and I come from the realm of tabletop wargaming. There is no niceness in those gaming spaces. They are cutthroat. They are completely competitive. And I love that play nice is enshrined in the rules that you pull out of the box. If I open up the rules of the game right now on this screen, everyone will see that one of the four rules of the game is play nice. And that means everything.
Yeah.
Yes. Although I still forget that it says play nice in the rulebook because I still use the old version. Are you aware of this? It used to say, don't be a dick.
Amazing.
that's the original rule.
Can I just get a rule sheet that has that, just that change? I want that. That's what I want.
Yeah, rule four used to be don't be a dick. But play nice is probably better to publish.
Toned down for publishing. Yeah.
Something is lost in the translation.
Like an end on sort of like a, or get close to the end on sort of a positive end of that line. Milk and I recently were playing a game of diplomacy with Clock Tower players, and it was the weirdest goddamn game of diplomacy ever, because there was just immediately two mega alliances that were just completely uninterested in ever stabbing anyone else on their team in the back, because we're just so used to the play nice mentality. Like, I, like, ultimately was like, this game is going to be boring unless I stab my neighbors. Let me pre-write out a large apology letter to them.
We had brand new players in the middle of the board, too. Germany and Italy. Diplomacy's played in Europe. We had Germany and Italy were brand new players that played, like, maybe one game 10 years ago. And so, like, nobody really wanted to, like, mess with them. Like, it was great, you know, as a social experiment, not as a game of diplomacy. Which is not a nice game. It's just not, and it's not a game that you can play friendly.
Diplomacy probably isn't the greatest game for Clocktower players for that reason, and for one other, which is related to the wizard. In that Clocktower players are always looking for the angle, right? The angle that's going to get them an answer, that's going to get them a solve, that's going to get them something. And the wizard is great for that because, you know, if you're on the good team, you're always looking for the angle of how can I take advantage of what the wizard has done based on the clues that we've got that we think is happening? How can I work out what's happened? If you're on the evil team, you're like, how can we juice more out of this wish, right? Other games that Clocktower players play are most interesting when they are open-ended enough for you to be able to be like, yeah, but if we do this, then we can maybe make that happen. And so, like, mega games I've played a bunch of with my Clocktower group and a few other groups of, like, heavy Clocktower players are great because we had exactly that. We played a massive, like, global... Everyone was sort of a member of the government of various nations, and there were, like, 16 different nations represented across the planet. And, like, instantly, you could see all the Clocktower players being like, how can we mess with this game? How can we do something different that isn't what's expected to happen? How can we make a new scenario come up here that isn't what we expected so that everyone has fun? And so we ended up with... you're fine with language on this podcast, right?
Yeah.
Slightly coarse. Great. We ended up with an alliance of France, the UK, and Brazil... which merged into one mega nation called Fuckzil, which it was just very silly. We had a great time. And, like, this mega nation wasn't very powerful, couldn't do many things, but it ended up really just changing the world, right? Because everyone else is suddenly looking at it like, Russia and the US can play on that playing field, and everyone else goes, oh, we are small fish now. We are really out of our water. And so it just changed the entire thing, because there were alliances popping up everywhere, like you had. But because it's an open-ended RPG, people could turn around to the people running the game and being like, we want to send a spy to do this thing and try and assassinate this person or do this thing. And they're like, that's not in the rules of the game. It's like, and? Can we do it? Like, what's the problem here? This is a perfectly feasible thing my government would do. We want to infiltrate their lab that's doing this thing. And so, like, that mentality of, like, we're going to play the game together, and the wizard wish is just an opportunity for us to do something wild that's not in the rules of the game. It's an opportunity for you to turn around and be like, yeah, but what if in World War II we all made one mega nation with, you know, the most of Africa and all of South America, and gave them all rights and made them all equal citizens of the mega nation of the West or something. How does that turn out? That's a great opportunity to, like, completely derail and do something completely different that maybe completely changes the game, but gives you all a completely different experience that is probably going to be really fun because it's completely new. So, like, if you're going to do a big swinging wizard wish, Make the nation of Fuckzill. It'll be funny.
You heard it here first, everyone. Make the nation of Fuckzill. That's what you should do with your
wizard. That is the goal of the wizard. That's the goal of the wizard.
Yeah. Ed, thank you so much for coming and sharing your wisdom and wit with us today. We appreciate you. We've wanted to have you on the podcast for forever, I think, and we just it's never lined up. And this is kind of the perfect opportunity. Do you want to share what you're up to with the folks? So we try to roll out the red carpet for our guests.
I'm just around everywhere. That's basically what I do. I'm hopefully going to be doing more of the Sunday streams with Emma and Avery. I'm looking forward to doing some more of those. For those that don't know, I'm sort of bilocating between the UK and the US now, which is one of the reasons that this worked, rather than having half a planet in between us and making time zones difficult. I don't know if people can still buy tickets to the Cocktail Cruise, but it's going to be very fun. It's going to be very silly. You should do that if you can. And I suspect it's going to be successful enough you can do it again next year. I think it's going to be a great opportunity to just put a lot of people that love Clock Tower on a boat and be together and play games, both Clock Tower and not Clock Tower, as much as we like, and socialise, and various other things. Final Freak On, come to every convention. They're all great. Especially PatterCon, which is what it's called. None of this good LeechCon nonsense.
No,
if you're in the UK, go to PatterCon. Its official name is PatterCon. I will hear nothing else. But yeah, thanks, guys. This was really fun. Yep. I really love chatting to you both.
Thanks, Ed. Right. We appreciate you. That's our podcast for the week, everybody. We appreciate you. Emma, do you want to say anything else? May your scenarios stay grim, everybody. We'll see you next time.